We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Hello everyone and welcome to the November 5th, 2018 edition of the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show covering the serious and mocking the ridiculous NFL news of the last week, brought to you by MyBookie. I'm Blair Andrews, you can follow me on Twitter at AmITheRealBlair, and my co-host is Hassan Rahim, who you can follow at HRR5010. Hassan, what's up?
Hey Blair, what's going on? By now, I guess, if you're familiar with how this goes, it was Sunday and the NFL happened.
Yeah. And we wish it that it had gone differently, I guess, for many of our teams, at least for many of my teams. But it's all good. We got a lot of news to discuss today, and I'm really excited to be discussing it with our guest. Joining us on the show is Sean Slavin. Sean is a contributor to 2QBs and RotoViz. Additionally, Sean is a 2QB consultant for Draft Day Consultants. You can follow him on Twitter at Slavin22. Sean, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on, guys. Excited to talk some football.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's get right into the news. First item up, Duke Johnson caught all 9 of his targets for 78 yards and 2 touchdowns while rushing once for 8 yards in Sunday's Week 9 loss to the Chiefs. So Sean, with Freddie Kitchens taking over the OC role in the wake of Todd Haley's firing, Duke Johnson saw his heaviest usage and he led all Browns receivers in targets and yards. But do you think that this trend will continue going forward?
I wouldn't say I expect Duke Johnson to lead the Browns in targets and yards every week, but we can at least reset our outlook to something closer to the preseason when we're waiting for this breakout from this athletic guy who we know has games like this in him. It's nice to see him being utilized like this, especially given the lack of receiver depth behind Jarvis Landry and David Njoku. So it definitely makes us more comfortable firing up Duke Johnson in a flex, and I think he still has the upside to be an RB2 given this type of usage.
Yeah, and that kind of said is pretty interesting because it looked like Duke Johnson was actually more or less Baker Mayfield's safety valve in this game, which is something that he's been sorely lacking when Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley were in around with Cleveland. So I got a question for you, Sean. Like, what are your thoughts here on Baker's? I know you've done a lot of terrific work actually on rookie quarterbacks and rookie quarterback, but you know, career arcs and so on. And I know that Baker Mayfield is one of the best prospects that we've seen in a long time. So I got a question is like, how do you see the rest of the season playing out? What do you think Cleveland needs to do for him, you know, just to make sure that he gets comfortable over the next few weeks? Like, what are your thoughts on how they should go about with like helping Baker Mayfield?
So, yeah, I love Baker Mayfield as a prospect. And, you know, his rookie season hasn't been great, but I mean, we've seen a lot of good things from him. His accuracy, all world accuracy in college is definitely translating to the pros, and he can make plays happen on the fly. But it's tough being a rookie quarterback without a great set of weapons. But he definitely has some talent to work with. And I think what Freddie Kitchens and his new role could do is really focus on Jarvis Landry, Njoku, and Duke Johnson. A big part of the Rams' success is just how much they focus on their talented, their four top talents, the three wide receivers and Gurley. And they scheme everything around those guys. They don't take them out of the game. And they're not throwing the ball to Josh Reynolds unless they have to when someone goes down. And I mean, they're lucky enough to still get two touchdowns out of him last week. But I think it's a simple thing, but if you just try and focus on your top talents and just scheme them towards them, I think Mayfield will definitely have an easier job rather than Antonio Callaway. I mean, there's definitely some talent there, but when you're racking up targets to the likes of Callaway and Ratley and guys like that, it's just not optimal for a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, so today we saw, I mean, obviously Duke Johnson led in targets. Landry only had 7. I think it's maybe the lowest number of targets he's seen all season. They were kind of trying to spread the ball around. I mean, Higgins had 4, Ratley had 4. Brashad Perryman actually had 6 targets. You know, hardly even knew he was on the Browns. So, I mean, do you see much hope of them trying to focus the target shares under Freddie Kitchens? Is the game today maybe a sign that they won't do that, or should we not read too much into it?
It's tough to say. I mean, like you said, they did, despite giving Johnson more targets than he's been seeing, it was still pretty spread out. And especially Njoku got 5 targets today, which was modest, but after his first couple months of just getting heavy usage for the tight end, only 5 targets over the last 2 games is pretty disappointing. So I think you have a good point that maybe we can't expect them just to focus their pass game into a few guys, but see next week, huh?
Matthew Stafford completed 25 of 36 passes for 199 scoreless yards in the Lions' 24-9 Week 9 loss to the Vikings. Sean, we got our first look at the Lions' offense without Golden Tate, and it wasn't pretty. Stafford took a career-high 10 sacks in this game. He lost a fumble on a very, you know, bad play. Do you expect this offense to bounce back next week?
That's tough to say. I mean, Tate was definitely a catalyst for this offense. What he can do after the catch is almost unrivaled across the league, but they still do have a lot of talent on the team. I mean, Marvin Jones is not the most consistent receiver, but he's got a lot of talent and seeing good things from Galladay. Theo Riddick isn't, you know, most explosive player, but he's solid and he's back now. Today was rough for Stafford with all those sacks, but it was definitely the offensive line's worst day of the season by far, and hopefully we can just chalk this up to Danielle Hunter, Everson Griffin, and Sheldon Richardson just balling out all in the same day. I'd definitely be worried about Stafford. You know, this season has been a bit of a step back, but I still think you can count on him in good matchups, and even in some negative game script, he can throw 50 passes and get a few touchdowns. So he's still a streaming type in a one quarterback league and a solid option in super flex or 2QB.
Yeah, I guess it's possible that, you know, Tate was actually kind of masking the problems that this offensive line might have had just with his ability to, you know, convert on short targets and kind of run routes close to the line where you can, you know, Stafford can get the ball out quickly. That's kind of narrative. I don't know how, you know, whether that's true, but I mean, just the stark difference between, you know, what the Lions were doing earlier in the season and what we saw today just makes me think they're, you know, maybe they're missing Golden Tate more than they thought. I mean, yeah, Riddick with 8 targets. I guess they're maybe trying to replace some of what Tate does with Riddick, but I think the biggest disappointment for me today was that Golladay only got 4 targets. Do you think the volume we saw from him earlier in the season is kind of, should we not expect that anymore? I mean, the last 3 games, I think he's been, you know, I can't even remember, like 2 targets in one game, 1 target in another game or something. So it's been pretty disappointing just from a volume standpoint. Is that something we should expect more of going forward, or do you think he'll get back to the volume we saw earlier?
I mean, there's definitely a clear path to those targets with Tate out, but like you said, it's disappointing that it didn't happen on day one with him gone. I think something like 6 to 7 targets as a baseline isn't what owners are hoping for, but if he can be around there every week and get a few bunched in with 10, maybe some days Marvin Jones is the clear target leader, some days Golladay is, but I think that's how this offense has been. Over the last couple of years, Golden Tate and Marvin Jones have ended up with similar raw target totals over the years, but on any given day, one of them can be featured over the other, and that's what we might be seeing from Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay going forward.
Yeah, I was actually just looking into this. It looks like Riddick kind of slotted in a little bit where, like, they had just taking over what Tate used to do. Really, what's kind of surprising to me is just the lack of volume here. I mean, this is a squad that trailed by 17 points and never really threatened. I mean, they were trailing 17-6 at the half. They never really threatened to do anything more than just sort of lose. And I think really this entire squad and really the coaching staff needs to take a very long look at itself, because the final 3 points they scored came in the fourth quarter with a minute left to play on fourth down, where they didn't even go for it. They just opted to kick a field goal despite being down, you know, by multiple scores. I mean, this is a team that plays this glacial pace for unknown reason, and they're just like not interested in winning games. It's really weird.
All right, before we get into No Shit Shit No, here's a quick reminder that you can support the RotoViz Radio Network and our 10 shows per week on Patreon. By doing so, you'll gain exclusive access to RotoViz Live, our weekly Sunday morning video show answering all your fantasy questions. Patronships start at just $6 a month and provide exclusive access to RotoViz Live. That's 4 shows per month on top of 40 podcasts for just $6. Become a RotoViz Radio patron today to join an exclusive community of listeners, access premium content, and do your part in helping the network to grow and continue to produce high-quality, industry-leading programming.
And speaking of exclusives, as a loyal podcast listener, you can get 30% off a RotoViz NFL Pass right now. It's available to the NFL Podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Gain unlimited access to all of our NFL content and tools for the rest of the season. You get amazing value. You help support the pod. Once again, that's rotoviz.com/podcast.
All right, now let's get into No Shit Shit No. First item up, Alex Smith completed 30 of 46 passes for 306 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 interception in Washington's Week 9 loss to Atlanta.
So I'm going to say shit no on the overall volume, but kind of no shit on the touchdown total and what we've seen from him. I mean, last year is looking like a blip over his career rather than the norm, and we're back to seeing game manager Alex Smith. I mean, even in a win against the Giants last week, he had less than 200 passing yards. I think the Falcons, just their decimated pass defense and the fact that they were up by so much it makes sense that Smith threw for 46 passes, but I do not see him getting close to that going forward. Around, if you can get 250 yards and two touchdowns out of him, you should be really happy. But something closer to last week's effort is what we'd expect.
Nathan Peterman completed 31 of 49 passes for 189 yards and three interceptions in the Bills' Week 9 loss to the Bears.
No shit. It's tough to just expect someone to come in and throw three interceptions and no touchdowns, but that's what it's looking like for Nathan Peterman's career.
Let me reframe the question just a little bit. I know, like, we were just talking a little bit about rookie quarterbacks at the top of the show, and out of curiosity, what do the Bills have to do to ensure that they can at least judge Josh Allen fairly?
That's a tough question, just because they are completely bare when it comes to receiving talent. I mean, their defense is actually surprisingly good, but it's still, they just get into bad situations of having to throw the ball all the time with no talent there, and they can't even use Shady to his potential. So I think you just kind of have to throw Josh Allen back in there when he's healthy and just hope to see him making plays. You know, he has that big arm, which he's been able to use, and he can scramble. It's one of his stronger skills, but just kind of be happy with him making plays and just hope a little bit more consistency comes with it. And I think the biggest thing is just going to be next year, just focusing on getting him more protection and another weapon or two, and seeing if he can get a big jump and improvement in year two.
Adam Thielen caught 4 of 7 targets for 22 yards and one touchdown in the Vikings' 24-9 Week 9 win over the Lions.
Shit, no. I don't think anyone expected him to only get 22 yards, 7 targets, 4 catches, anything that low with Diggs out in a spot like this. I mean, Cousins only had to throw the ball 22 times, and so it was still a decent target share for Thielen, above 30%, I think. But I think even with the touchdown, owners are disappointed this week. And even if Diggs is back, Thielen's weekly 10 targets and 100 yards should come back with it.
Patrick Mahomes completed 23 of 32 passes for 375 yards with three touchdowns and one interception in Sunday's Week 9 win over the Browns.
No shit. The guy is incredible. And I mean, what they are doing with that offense is just as incredible. And sometimes it's hard to parse out the quarterback from the system. I mean, look at Baker Mayfield in college with Lincoln Riley, or Patrick Mahomes with Texas Tech. But at some point, it's, as fantasy owners, who cares whether it's the system or the quarterback? They're both great. I don't care which one is the bigger influence. Big things should be expected every week from Mahomes.
Julio Jones caught 7 of 10 targets for 121 yards and a touchdown in the Falcons' Week 9 win over the Redskins.
No shit, again. I've been on the Julio Jones train, you know, forever. And, I mean, it's an easy train to be on for the most part, especially if you fade touchdown rates to an extent in your analysis. But all off season, I was, you know, I was the old man yelling at a cloud that Julio Jones is actually one of the most consistent players in the NFL or fantasy football. And most of that is because you can dial him up for double digit targets. And I mean, the worst he's going to get is 50 yards. And, you know, the touchdowns will come when he's getting that many yards. If it finally came after 900 yards on the season, but I mean, this is not going to be his only touchdown this month. He's going to keep crushing it, and touchdowns will follow.
James Conner delivered 107 yards on 24 carries, and he added 7 catches for 56 yards and a touchdown on 9 targets in Pittsburgh's Week 9 win over the Ravens.
No shit. I mean, the Ravens defense is nothing to sneeze at, but we've seen it for years now, whether you plug in one of the best running backs in the league or an aging running back in D'Angelo Williams or a young unproven talent like James Conner, it's going to be great things for the offense and for fantasy, especially when he's used in the passing game like that. 9 targets and 24 carries, that's what we're hoping out of any running back, whether it's Todd Gurley or Saquon Barkley, anyone. And he deserves to be up in that tier right now. I mean, when Bell comes back, if he comes back, I mean, who knows? But until then, he's right up in the top tier.
Tevin Coleman rushed 13 times for 88 yards and caught 5 of 7 targets for 68 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Falcons' Week 9 win over Washington.
I'm going to say shit no on this one. I love to see it as someone who's probably can be described as a Tevin Coleman truther, but he has not looked as explosive this year as he has in the past. And 150 yards and 2 touchdowns is nice, but I think next week we can go back to, you know, if you're struggling at the running back position, you can slot him into your RB2 or even your flex and be fine with it. But if you're stacked at running back, there's no reason to think that he's a must start just because of this.
Yeah, one of the most frustrating things about owning Tevin Coleman almost everywhere, like I do, is that the Falcons just don't seem to use him in the passing game. Sarkisian doesn't draw plays for him to be targeted. I mean, today he was targeted 7 times, and obviously, you know, he was awesome. So do you think this is kind of maybe a signal that things are trending in the right direction, or is this more of an aberration?
I think it's definitely a good sign, and maybe he gets more consistently used in the passing game. I mean, most coaches in the NFL are hindsight based, and you see him, you know, take 2 targets to the house. I mean, why not dial him up again next week? But so I think it's definitely a good sign that he was able to do this, but just we can't expect him to be a top 20 running back every week.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Sarkisian probably has a Rotoviz NFL account because, like, the buy low machine just loved this matchup against Washington from a PPR perspective. And I looked at the machine and I couldn't bring myself to, like, start Tevin Coleman in leagues where I was forced into it. And I have paid the price everywhere. Mike Evans caught just 1 of 10 targets for 16 yards in the Bucs' Week 9 loss to the Panthers.
Shit, no. That's an easy one. I mean, the targets are no shit. He's been a target monster ever since he's been in the league. And it doesn't really matter if he has a ton of weapons around him, which he does now. He is just such a force in the, like, 12 to 20 yard depth target area that it's just, whether it's Jameis Winston or Fitzpatrick, it's hard not to dial him up just consistently. And I mean, catching one of those passes today hurts, especially just he's been crushing it this year in both the target capacity and efficiency wise. So, you know, you take some bad variants and you go back. And I think if the Evans owner, you know, is frustrated, maybe you send out something, but I think he's been good enough before this that it might even be hard to buy low off of just 1 week.
Willie Snead came down with 7 catches for 58 yards on 8 targets Sunday in the Ravens' Week 9 loss to Pittsburgh.
No shit. Snead, Crabtree, and John Brown have all had some high target totals over the course of the year, and it's kind of been hard to trust any of them to repeat it because it seems like 2 of them will get 7 to 10 targets and one of them might get phased out. But Snead has been more and more involved in the offense every week. And I mean, getting 8 targets again is nice. I mean, hopefully you hope he gets a touchdown in there, but 12.8 PPR points, you know, and against the Steelers, I mean, that's fine. But if he adds a touchdown to that, that's a great day. So that's what you hope for next week.
Curtis Samuel caught 2 of 4 targets for 25 yards and a touchdown in the Panthers' Week 9 win over the Bucs. He also added a 33-yard rushing touchdown.
Shit no on the 2 touchdowns and only a handful of touches, but the usage is not surprising to me. On the other hand, he can be electric and he can score from anywhere on the field, but the Panthers just don't seem to want to involve him heavily. And there's a lot of games where they're only throwing 25 passes. So, and with Funchess, you know, and Greg Olsen eating up a lot of those targets, plus Christian McCaffrey, it's hard to manufacture touches for Curtis Samuel. So they have to do it in more screens and reverses and things like that. And yeah, it's nice that he turned 2 of those into touchdowns, but there's no way you can trust him plugging him into your lineup.
The one guy you didn't mention is someone I think that everyone was expecting a lot more from today, and that was DJ Moore, of course, who only got 2 targets after kind of breaking out last week. Do you think we should kind of expect his usage to be lower like this, or expect more kind of spike weeks and then back down to doing almost nothing? Or are you expecting a true breakout anytime soon for him?
I mean, we shouldn't expect this low of usage, but considering last week 6 targets was the most he'd gotten, it's hard to just expect more than that just because he looked really good last week. I mean, his usage was definitely ticking up each week, but over the past 4 games before this one, he was averaging 5 targets, and that was his best stretch of the season. So I think that's still a solid baseline, and Torrey Smith being out, you know, should have opened him up for more, but low passing volume kind of hurt him today. And but that's a risk when you have the Panthers, who are just, they get up early a lot and they like to just play the read option and just grind games out with that. So I think you hope that DJ Moore gets more usage next week. And if he does, maybe that's a signal that he really is being featured and this week was a blip. But I think we just have another week of wait and see. But it was definitely a disappointing week for Dynasty owners especially.
Anthony Miller caught 5 of 6 targets for 49 yards in the Bears' Week 9 win over the Bills.
I'm going to say no shit, but maybe not for the reason you're expecting. I mean, 6 targets and 49 yards was actually a solid market share of the offense today. And the Bears, I mean, there's been a couple games where Trubisky has had to throw it up 40, 50 times, but the way their defense is playing when it's clicking, and you know, and with Robinson out and them just wanting to pound the ball with Howard, I mean, we might have to live with a low volume passing offense, and Miller just hasn't done enough to, you know, kind of outshine that. It's nice to see him get 6 targets, but once Allen Robinson is back, he's going to eat into that, and I don't think you can trust Anthony Miller in any lineups.
Todd Gurley rushed 13 times for 68 yards and a touchdown. He also hauled in 6 of 7 targets for 11 yards in the Rams' Week 9 loss to the Saints.
Shit, no. Only 13 rushes for Gurley. I mean, they were down 35-14 at one point, and they were playing catch up. And I mean, he got 7 targets, which is nice, but considering how they had to go in pass mode, you would expect that to be even higher despite him being a running back. But they really had to force the ball downfield. And I mean, you just can't expect the Rams to be in that position on a week-to-week basis. I think he still scraped out a nice day. I mean, 20 targets and carries behind is still nice on a bad day. So Todd Gurley, the RB1, lock and load.
So let me ask you this question. What do you think it does to his MVP candidacy?
Ooh, I think this can hurt his MVP candidacy, just saying you can't just lean on a running back and beat a great team like the Saints. You know, it's nice that Gurley puts up seemingly 150 to 200 total yards and two touchdowns on a week-to-week basis, but the fact that when they get down early and they have to go away from him shows you that if he's not valuable enough to be heavily featured while down, how can he be an MVP?
Michael Thomas hauled in 12 of 15 targets for 211 yards and a touchdown in the Saints' Week 9 win over the Rams.
No shit. Michael Thomas is a beast. I mean, he has the physical tools to beat almost any matchup. His size and route running ability is just, he's up there in that regard. And I mean, the last few weeks, his target totals have been a little disappointing compared to the first month, but it does not surprise me that he's right back up here. I mean, 15 targets is a lot, but just right around 10 is something we can expect every week, even if it's not for 200 yards.
Jeff Heuerman, or Heuerman, however you pronounce it, hauled in 10 catches for 83 yards and a score on a team-high 11 targets in the Broncos' Week 9 defeat to the Texans.
No shit, actually. He's been featured more and more throughout the season, and I think Demaryius Thomas being out, I think we all wanted to see Courtland Sutton just, you know, kind of eat up all of those targets that we're leaving with DT, but it makes sense just where Heuerman is, you know, winning on the field and getting targets that he would take some of those in. 10 catches is a lot, but, and maybe we still expect him to fall down in the 6 to 7 target range. Maybe a game he has 4, maybe another one is closer to this, but in a weak year for tight ends, streaming him is fine. And unless he has a terrible matchup, because after the top 5 to 8 tight ends, it gets rough out there. And he might be a significant part of this offense going forward.
Keenan Allen caught 6 of 10 targets for 124 yards in the Chargers' Week 9 win over the Seahawks, adding 2 rushes for 28 additional yards.
No shit. I mean, Keenan Allen falls right in that Michael Thomas bucket of just, you kind of feel, you know, really frustrated when you see him get 5 targets in a game. And I think the Chargers have, you know, have been winning, so there's no reason to go back to the tape and say, you know, how can we turn this thing around? Let's get more touches to Allen. But they still did it anyway. I think maybe they did a little bit of self-scouting. In the last couple of weeks, they've been manufacturing more touches, like the rushes he got and some of those screen passes. So I think the Chargers kind of pinched themselves and said, you know, even though Melvin Gordon is tearing it up when he's healthy, and Mike Williams just keeps feasting on the deep ball, yet even if it's inconsistent, I think they need to lean on their top talent in Keenan Allen, and this is a great sign.
Dalvin Cook rushed 10 times for 89 yards, and he caught all 4 of his targets for 20 yards in the Vikings' Week 9 win over the Lions.
I'm going to say shit no for the efficiency in the run game, but it was definitely nice to see, for owners to see him come back, and even if he was on a pitch count, to see him put in work and get over 100 yards, and, you know, hopefully he can come back fully healthy in a week or two. And the 4 targets, modest, but considering the pitch count, is a great sign, because early in the season he was getting a lot more routes run and targets than we had seen last year, so in the small sample. So I think if he gets healthy and stays healthy, he can be one of those few workhorse running backs who's, you know, getting upwards of 20 carries a game and being featured in the passing game.
Mike Davis rushed 15 times for 62 yards and caught 7 of 8 targets for 45 yards in the Seahawks' Week 9 loss to the Chargers.
Shit, no. The 15 rushes for 60 yards doesn't surprise me, considering Carson was banged up. And it seemed like after a few early carries, they pulled Carson out of the game. I don't know if it was total or if they – I don't know if he got a few snaps in, but that doesn't surprise me. But 8 targets for Mike Davis is definitely surprising. And I think it has to go with Russell Wilson running around for his life and just getting the ball to whoever is close enough. But there's no way we can expect even more than 3 or so targets for Mike Davis on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I mean, I've ranted about this before, but like, it's really frustrating watching Russell Wilson run around for his life when their first-round draft pick is like, not even playing high leverage, getting high leverage touches. He's just basically burning space on the bench behind a 7th rounder and a street free agent, while, you know, the Giants were able to get a very solid rookie guard in Will Hernandez in the early 2nd. So, man, I don't know. Like the whole Rashad Penny draft pick at the 1st has been such a disappointment, massive bust situation that, you know, it's a bit difficult as a dynasty owner.
For sure.
I don't know if you own any Doug Baldwin anywhere. I don't own a whole lot, but I think Hassan has like owns more than anyone else in the whole industry. So what are you doing with Baldwin?
I'm crying every time I have to start him. like today, it's just I legitimately had to Google like was he out, because I think it was halfway through the 1st half. Somewhere midway through the 2nd quarter, and I was like, "Has he even been targeted?" And I looked it up, and he hadn't, but not because he wasn't on the field. It was because this team, for some reason, is so dedicated to like reaching 30 rush attempts that like they're tripping over themselves to get to some sort of imaginary threshold. So they run in, and then they'll win. It seems to be this weird backwards logic that they're, you know, deploying out in Seattle, which is fantastic, because, you know, it's been a, you know, I mean, like, realistically, like, you could see this entire plan backfire because they marched the ball down the field on the final drive of the game, and they had to convert a touchdown, which they didn't. But had they actually converted that touchdown, time had run out. They would have not had a chance to run a play for a 2-point conversion. Like, these guys just bled their own clock, and the Chargers were more than happy to do it. They just let them hang themselves, you know, with the rope of their own design. Sure, watching football is fun, but it's more entertaining when you have some action on the games. Guys, you've heard us talking about this for a few weeks, and some of you are still on the sidelines. Whether you're an expert or a rookie, you should be betting at MyBookie. If you're the kind of person that likes to bet a lot, bet a little and win a lot, actually, like playing the numbers in roulette, you can create a big parlay. You pick 3 teams to win. You hit all 3, you could turn $100 into $600. There's so much to bet on: football, basketball, hockey, and much more. MyBookie is the one bet I know you'll be happy with all year. I recommend these guys because I really trust them. MyBookie has been in business for years. They've got great online reviews, and their mobile site is easy to use. Make sure to follow at BetMyBookie on Twitter or Instagram. They personally respond to every mention and DM, and they've been giving away, you know, they've given away almost $10,000 in free money to their followers for this over the course of this football season. You'll be the first to know as soon as new odds and props are posted. Log on to MyBookie right now. Don't miss out on your opportunity to collect the industry's largest bonus. Use promo code RotoViz and you'll get your first deposit matched 100%. That's promo code RotoViz. You play, you win, you get paid.
All right, moving on to news item number 3. Demaryius Thomas caught all 3 of his targets for 61 yards, while Courtland Sutton caught 3 of his 5 targets for 57 yards. So, Sean, we got a quick peek at how both of Thomas and Sutton will be deployed by their respective offenses. What kind of impact do you think these guys might have for the rest of the season?
I mean, DT, it was a really exciting start for owners that either, you know, held strong through the struggles this season or maybe bought low on him. With all 3 of his catches and 61 yards coming in the 1st quarter, and it just seemed like, you know, this guy still has it. DeAndre Hopkins is on the other side. Watson is going to do big things with this guy. And then all of a sudden, he doesn't get a target the rest of the game. So it's definitely cloudy debut for DT, but it was a low volume passing effort for the Texans, which it seems like Watson is either throwing the ball 22 times or 50 times in a game. So maybe it comes down to DeAndre Hopkins is going to get 10 to 15 targets no matter what. It's either going to be a 50% target share or a 30% target share. But in those weeks where if we can predict that they'll be in a more negative game script, we can lean on DT a little bit more. And hopefully it gets closer to 8 targets. It's tough to start anyone who has a floor of 3 targets, but wide receivers with in-season trades often struggle, especially in the beginning. And the fact that he had a early rapport with Watson, I think, is encouraging overall. What do you guys have to say about Thomas?
I was kind of, I wasn't getting a lot of Thomas in the offseason. I didn't draft him a ton. So I don't actually own that much. It's definitely encouraging to see kind of the fast start. And I think, like you said, a lot of the sort of lack of targets he got the rest of the game can kind of be chalked up to the lack of volume. I guess my one concern with Thomas going forward is that he will see his role shrink a little bit when Kiki QT is fully healthy again. When he comes back, is he going to start commanding a lot more targets closer to the line of scrimmage, for instance, like he was for those few weeks early in the season? So, that's my only real hesitation with Thomas. I mean, you'd like to see him definitely get more than 3 targets, but I think in your first game after you come in, basically with less than a week to kind of figure out what you're doing, I think that's pretty encouraging.
I think it's kind of exciting that Thomas is now playing with like the best quarterback he's played with since, pre-spinal fusion Peyton Manning, right? Really, if he's still got any athleticism left in his body, I feel like Watson would be the kind of guy who can hit him on target in stride and let him make plays, let him like roll up yak. He doesn't have to really run as a polished route runner. He's really not the alpha on this offense. I wonder how much did he really feel like he was superior to actually better than Sanders. And then he was kind of getting phased out in Denver. He wasn't getting the kind of routes he used to run. They were kind of giving that to Cortland Sutton. So I wonder if Thomas is aware that he's got to sort of make a bit of a noise down the stretch here, especially because he's on an expiring deal. He's not, if he wants to get one more payday and when he hits free agency, this is probably his best chance, especially playing with Watson. And it also behooves the Houston coaching staff to kind of make sure that they're running plays that it's very easy for him to get his timing down with Watson on. He doesn't have to run complex routes or whatever. As long as Watson's able to hit him in space, let him do the natural, the rest of the take the ball the rest of the way. I didn't have a chance to see the game, but so I'm just sort of speculating. So I'm kind of interested to see how this shakes out going forward.
Great. And then Cortland Sutton, 5 targets was modest. I mean, we definitely wanted to see that jump. Like I said before, a lot of those went to Hyerman instead today, but I think that can be chalked up to just Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt kind of terrorizing Case Keenum and making him get the ball out early. 18 of Case Keenum's attempts went to Hyerman or the running backs for a total of 10 air yards on those 18 targets. So he had to get the ball out really quick today. And Cortland Sutton is the deep threat for the most part. He came in with an ADOT of 14, and today it was 13 and change. So we saw really similar usage as far as area of the field. And he did well on those targets, but I think what we want to see going forward is him taking some of those DT targets closer, a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage and adding that to the deep threat. Because when you're only getting deep targets, it's hard to be consistent. So maybe all those screens that were going to Demaryius Thomas still go to Manny Sanders. But I think if you get the ball to Sutton quick, he still can create in space. So I hope the Broncos don't just see him as a deep threat. And I think if they did, they wouldn't have shipped Demaryius Thomas to Houston.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think definitely are viewing Sutton as a more versatile player than just a deep threat or just what we saw today. He's someone I've kind of been expecting to have like a breakout week the whole season. And then he finally has what looks like a really good opportunity and doesn't get the targets, doesn't do much. It sounds like you're not worried at all about Sutton rest of season going forward just from this game. Who would you rather have rest of season between Sutton and DT?
Oh, that's a good question. And I think if Kiki QT wasn't in the picture, I might lean DT. He's more proven, and Watson has, even though it's regressed a little bit from last year, he's still a high efficiency thrower, especially compared to Case Keenum. But I think we can trust Sutton to be a little bit higher on the usage tree week to week, and volume is king.
Russell Wilson completed 26 of 39 passes for 235 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception in the Seahawks' 25-17 Week 9 loss to the Chargers. Today marks the first time since Week 2 that Wilson had more than 30 attempts. Sean, given that the Seahawks are committed to running the football, what are your expectations for Russell Wilson's fantasy prospects going forward?
It's been a tough year for anyone owning him. I mean, he's one of the guys we've been able to lock in to a top five quarterback year to year. But until last year, we had never seen him do it purely because of volume. It was always because of efficiency and rushing production. And for most of the year, none of those three things have really been there week to week. And so you hope that he gets a couple more games with 30 plus targets, but given Doug Baldwin's not at 100%, and I mean, Tyler Lockett is talented, but he's closer to a one-trick pony than, you know, what a Doug Baldwin at 100% gives you. So, I mean, they're still giving a lot of targets to some less talented folks, and we can't rely on the efficiency, and the rushing work has not been there. There's been reports that he's been playing through a hamstring injury, and maybe that's what's limiting him, but you hope that he gets 30 attempts. And I mean, he can get 3 touchdowns on 25 attempts like he did last week, but he's not as rock solid as he was the last few years. And that doesn't mean he's unusable. He's still a nice quarterback, but you can't just dial him up every week in a one quarterback league.
Yeah, one of the kind of narratives surrounding Wilson has been kind of a weird one, is that he starts every season slow and he picks up, you know, the pace in the second half and starts to kind of be the Wilson we all remember, because we remember the second half of the season better or something. And it looked like that might be the case, you know, just his last 3 games. I guess he had 3 touchdowns in each of them before this one. So yeah, I don't know, maybe there's something to that. Obviously today he wasn't that much worse, still 2 touchdowns and almost 20 fantasy points, so you know, it's the kind of day I guess you'll take if you started Wilson. It's like, it won't kill you. You obviously want to see more. I mean, one thing, he did have 41 rushing yards, which is the most he's had all season. I think it's only the second time he's had more than 20, in fact. So that's kind of encouraging to see him rushing the ball more. Do you think that's something we can expect to continue going forward, him getting more rushing work?
Yeah, that's a good point. I missed that one, and that's definitely encouraging. I mean, I think if his hamstring's back to being healthy, I don't think he'd be running for 60 yards if it wasn't. it seems like whenever he's been a little banged up, they still like him to use his legs to manufacture some plays back there, but they kind of, it looks like they just tell him, don't cross the line of scrimmage. But so to see him do that today, maybe we'll see a little bit more of 2016, 2017 Russell Wilson. And I mean, if the high efficiency, high touchdown rate continues, especially on his like few targets to Tyler Lockett, that it seems like every third ball that goes his way is a touchdown. I mean, maybe he is closer to what we should expect, but it just, and maybe the numbers are closer than what I remember, but just watching him play hasn't seemed like vintage Russell Wilson, but last couple of weeks he has gotten the job done.
Please, for the love of God, just revive Doug Baldwin for the latter half of the year. I'll never draft him again. Just get me out of the season.
I don't know, man. What would you accept in a trade for Doug Baldwin if you're trying to move him off your teams, Hassan?
Genuinely, I don't know. For Dynasty, I don't know how much you'd actually give, right? Because Doug Baldwin, from a Dynasty perspective, he might just be done.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't pay me to take Baldwin in Dynasty.
Right, yeah. Like you'd probably, like, I'd probably have to actually give up a good asset to move him. In redraft, I also just don't know. He just hasn't been useful. You know what I mean? Like, he just hasn't been particularly good. And we're coming up on the trade deadline now, and I have no idea what to do. I think he should be fine next week because they face the Rams. And realistically, if the Seahawks try to do today, try to do against the Rams what they did against the Chargers today, they're going to get vastly humiliated. Like this is a squad that's going to absolutely like score a touchdown per drive and be completely content with watching them go 3 and out. I mean, like, this is an offense that seems to behave as if like the forward pass was invented last year. They go run, pass, punt. And that's pretty much their game plan.
Yeah, not good.
So I don't know what can you like legitimately move him for. Just earlier today, I actually made a trade where I sent Demaryius Thomas for Amari Cooper. So that was kind of lucky. But I guess Amari would be the guy you're kind of like targeting here, right? Like, if you're a frustrated Doug Baldwin owner, then you're targeting guys who are also equally talented with their wide receiver talent, and you're just swapping wideouts. And the reason you want to target Amari over someone like Doug is because the buy low machine actually has, you know, a very favorable schedule for Dallas wide receivers. So you just got to take a leap of faith that a wide receiver changing teams is going to get the kind of usage that you hope he gets. And it's a very big leap of faith to take, because we've seen that Dallas Cowboys is coaching staff. And I don't know if they've got like two brain cells to rub between a lot of them.
Yes, I don't hate that move, trying to get Amari Cooper. I'm wondering, if I own Amari Cooper, am I selling him for Baldwin? Maybe just the uncertainty of his situation in Dallas would be enough. But yeah, hard to make trades for these guys at the moment. Hard to know exactly how to evaluate them.
Yeah, it seems like it'd just be hard to find a buyer at, like, especially in Dynasty. I mean, mm-hmm. Doug Baldwin, a veteran wide receiver, you'd think, you know, look towards, you know, a contender who's pushing his chips in for this year and maybe next year. But if you can't plug him in right now and trust him, why does a contender want him? So if you're a Dynasty owner, I think you might just have to hold, and just maybe if he gets a 10-12 target game, and maybe you sell him to a contender. But besides that, just hold out hope and see if he gets healthy next year, and, you know, you can recoup some of that value.
Is now maybe the time to buy low on Baldwin?
That's a tough one, because Baldwin's got like the name brand attached to him, right? And so like Baldwin owners are, that's really what like genuinely is kind of what drives his valuation, what makes him a tough one to figure out how to value, right? Because like, you're not just giving up on a wide receiver, you're giving up on Doug Baldwin, and don't know what to make of that. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Special thanks to our guest, Sean Slavin. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Slavin22. Please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on iTunes and subscribe to our Patreon. For Hassan Rahim, I'm Blair Andrews. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast channel on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Ready, set, save, California. It's sell-a-thon time this Labor Day at your California Ford dealer. Get ready for the best offers of the summer on the 2019 Ford lineup, like an adventure-ready Explorer or the all-new built Ford Tough Ranger. Or get behind the wheel of the 2019 Ford F-150 with the power, toughness, and capability to carry any payload. You've waited all summer for these deals, and the wait is over. So ready, set, save. The Labor Day sell-a-thon is on now. But don't wait. These deals won't last. Hurry into your California Ford dealer before it all ends September 3rd.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.